This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The New Statesman.
Labour are planning to renationalise the UK's railways. Train travel in the UK has become an increasingly painful experience in the past few years. Prices continue to rise at an astonishing rate. Meanwhile, delays, cancellations and strikes have become the norm. Many have simply given up on this mode of transport. Last night, Labour announced their plan to get Britain's railways back on track. See what we did there? What does this mean, though? And could bringing trains back into public ownership really fix the dire state of rail travel in the UK? Hello, I'm Hannah Barnes, Associate Editor at The New Statesman, and you're listening to The New Statesman podcast. As Anoush mentioned last week, she's now gone on maternity leave. We're wishing her the very best, and we will be doing our very best to continue providing you, our listeners, with the best commentary and analysis of UK politics in this very busy election year. I'm delighted to be joined today in the studio by my colleagues, Freddie Haywood, political correspondent, and senior editor, George Eaton, who's just interviewed Louise Haig, the Shadow Transport Secretary, about these prospective plans. George, let's start with you then. But before we get into the detail, what's the state of the railways at the moment?
Not very satisfactory, as anyone who's used them will know. Cancellations, delays, some of the highest rail fares in Europe. And when I interviewed Louise Haig, she made an interesting point as well, which is that Labour's research shows that voters, particularly current Tory ones or former Tory ones, see the state of the railways as a sign of national decline. You know, Britain, the country that launched the first railway line in 1825, that exported them to the world, it's become a bit of an international embarrassment. And people are always comparing them to other European countries, and we're close to the bottom of the pile.
And I guess we've been plagued by a series of strikes as well, haven't we?
We have, but I think the problems predate that. Labour are latching on to that sense of decline. I think they are. They're also, I think, embracing the inevitable. We've already seen many train operators fall into bankruptcy or not being able to provide their services. So the government is essentially, as the operator of last resort, taken over. So there's sort of, I think there's six or seven or something like that, operators around the country that are already being operated by the government. So this is just saying that, so once those contracts come to an end, then the government will essentially not renew them and they'll take them into what they're calling Great British Railway. So it's sort of nationalisation bit by bit. There'll be a gradual process. And the reason they're doing that is that they don't have to pay out compensation to those private companies.
Yeah. I mean, before we get into the detail of what they're going to do, George, do you think this is going to be received happily on the left of the party? Because is it a nod to privatisation doesn't always work? You know, it's renationalisation. Although they're reluctant to use that word.
Absolutely. So, I mean, this is one of the few policies that has survived from Labour's 2019 manifesto. Very similar policy. And as you say, it sort of marks a recognition that public ownership has a role to play. Now, Labour don't sort of talk it up in radical language, but there's quite a distinctive strand emerging. You've got the railways. They've said they'd launch GB Energy, a publicly owned clean energy company. Yeah. They'd have a national wealth fund. Louise Haig, actually, the week before, has been talking about publicly owned bus companies. So this is a clear shift away from what would have been seen as the new Labour approach, which is very much, you know, we'll run schools and hospitals, but the rest you leave largely to the market.
So what are the details of this plan? As Freddie's already explained, it's not day one, scrap all the the private operators and renationalise. What are the details and what do they say they're going to do?
So it's all of the contracts are due to expire in the first term of a Labour government. As they expire, 2027, 2028, they will take them into public hands. As Freddie says, there is precedent for this with the current rail operators. They're also going to launch this Great British Railways, which actually the government has promised, which is designed to act as a guiding mind. So it's public control, so you'll have more consistency over fares and the management of the railway. So it's designed to end this incredibly complicated and fragmented system. But it's important to point out they're not taking the rolling stock into public ownership. So that's the carriages and the locomotives. The Great British Railways would still have to lease those from private companies because there would be an upfront cost there. And when I interviewed Louise Hay, she was very clear on the cost benefits she thinks of public ownership. She thinks the government could save 2.2 billion through this approach. Now, we'll wait and see on that. But the key thing is there is no upfront cost. So when I asked about water, lots of outrage at the water industry at the moment. There may have to be an emergency nationalisation of Thames Water, some would like the entire industry taken into public ownership. She said, look, there would be an upfront cost there. It's not equivalent. And emphasised Rachel Reeves's sort of ironclad fiscal rules she described them as. So Labour are very keen to emphasise this will not cost the taxpayer. They say it will save money.
I mean, this is the point, I think. It's a compromise between those two positions. We saw this policy be debated over the past 2 years. You've got to remember, cast our minds back to 2022 when Rachel Reeves, she supposedly announced her fiscal rules, but really she said she was going to announce her fiscal rules at some point in the future. And in that interview, she essentially said that there's not enough money for nationalisation. That's when she said we're not going to do rail, mail and water, I think it was. And then the Labour Party quickly clarified later on that day to say, well, there could be a positive role for public ownership in the rail industry. So there was that split, and I think they've come to that compromise now where you do take some of it into public ownership, but you do it without the cost.
Is that really true? Is it going to be costless, if you like? Because obviously you'd expect the Conservative Party to say this, wouldn't you? But they're saying this is completely unfunded, that it will cost, but there's no bill attached. And the operators aren't happy. Again, you might expect that. But this morning, I think it's Andy Bagnall, the chief executive of Rail Partners, he's saying, you know, the best of both worlds is to have this Great British Railways that both parties are talking about, but then you harness the productivity, if you like, of the private operators. And he's saying without that commercial focus, the cost is going to creep up over the time. I mean, have Labour got an answer to that?
Yes. So I put this point to Louise Hay saying, look, the classic criticism of public ownership, and it was one made about British Rail and other nationalised industries, they are competing with other political priorities, schools, hospitals, and the Treasury obviously has limited resources. She made the argument that there are cost savings she thinks to be made from a more integrated system, that no one could say the private firms are performing adequately at the moment. But I do think the challenge for Labour politically will come when do passengers see a day-to-day difference? There's going to be a lot of noise now about this being one of Labour's big radical policies, and you're raising expectations of a transformation on the railways. And some might think of cheaper fares. The reality is Labour has made very few big spending pledges.
And they've not committed to that noticeably.
No, those it's concentrated on have been, the NHS, schools, childcare, there are lots of different priorities. And so I think the idea that they're going to suddenly make rail travel far more affordable for largely middle-class commuters, it's not realistic.
It's interesting on that, just on the pricing point, the rail industry have been saying today and yesterday that the reason that prices have increased so much, I think it's about 20% in real terms, is because the government subsidies fallen back. So the government made the choice that we're going to give the rail industry less money, and therefore they had to increase prices to account for that. So if you do want to see prices fall, as many people do, because they think it's so expensive now, and as you said, it's one of the most expensive in Europe, then you probably do need that government subsidy. And if that's not going to come, then you're probably not going to see the price fall.
I mean, do you think prices are going to go up? I noticed that Louise Haig this morning, doing the broadcast round, was very keen to dodge that question and said, oh, well, we're not aiming to put them up, but of course. But is it likely that they will?
I think a lot depends.
Prices always go up.
Yeah. A lot depends on what happens to inflation. I think a slower rate of price increase and giving commuters more transparency and choice over prices. I think there are ways of creating a better system of fares, a more rational, a more transparent one than we have at the moment. I think without promising big subsidy. Because as Freddie says, ultimately, that's going to be taxpayers' money that then can't be used elsewhere. Mm. And you know, the railways have become much more of a political priority than in the past. But I think the reality is, you know, Labour is going to have to put probably the health service and defence, actually. You know, to look at the big picture, you know, Keir Starmer talks about raising defence spending to 2.5%. Now, all of this would be different in a world in which Labour are saying we're going to raise taxes for almost everyone. They're doing the opposite. You know, they are saying we're going to get the economy growing. That's how we'll generate more revenue. We'll have limited tax rises. So that, again, makes the fiscal picture much more complicated than people might hope.
It's interesting on the economic growth point and how they've sold this policy. I think they've sold this in a very passenger-focused, technocratic way. I think Louise Hague in the policy document essentially described herself as the passenger in chief, which is extremely cringeworthy, but it also points to their priorities.
I quite like that.
Well, there you go. Well, oh, sorry, Hannah. if you go through the announcement as well, it's all about streamlining fares, it's about contactless, it's about having a passenger standards authority. They're very much not trying to sell it in an ideological way and in the way that we might have seen in 2017, you know, standing up to private businesses and the fat cats in the city or whatever it might be. They're not doing that at all. They're also not selling it in terms of economic growth, which I think is quite interesting. There's nothing to do with levelling up here, is there?
No.
Which has just completely dropped from Labour's lexicon. And they're not saying, OK, well, if we have a better connectivity around the country, if we can connect the north up, then maybe we'll get better economic growth. No, it's purely about passengers, which I think is an interesting note.
After the break, how much of this plan has already been set out by the Tories? If you're subscribed to The New Statesman, you can get all our episodes ad-free on the New Statesman app. It's on both iOS and Android. Just search for New Statesman on the App Store or Google Play Store. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I mean, how much do you think the success of this, you know, assuming Labour win and everything comes under public ownership by 2027-28, how much do you think success will depend on successfully negotiating with ASLEF, the outstanding disagreements with the Rail Drivers Union and you know, the RMT have sort of cautiously welcomed it, haven't they? But how much is that going to impact?
Very critical. So I asked Louise Hague about the unions because, as you say, you know, strike action has blighted the network. I think you had the first national rail strike for 25 years. She said we would aim to have a much more constructive relationship with the unions. We'd aim to have a new workplace strategy, try and anticipate disputes in advance rather than getting caught in this confrontational approach. She pointed to the Labour government in Wales, which she said had limited strike action because it did take a more constructive approach with the unions, treating them as partners rather than adversaries. I think clearly you can improve relations. The charge and critics will be that ultimately, if you want to please unions, you need to pay them more.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
And how are you going to pay for that? I mean, that is the criticism from industry, where they're essentially saying, look, Labour says it's going to be passenger focused. How is it going to keep its union allies happy? But look, it's certainly true you can have a more constructive relationship. The Conservatives are clearly sometimes lent into conflict with the rail unions because they believed it would damage Labour through association and that ultimately the public would side with the government. They haven't. And that's been a big problem for the Conservatives, not just on the railways, but also in the health service and other areas.
Yeah, this is all about culpability. Who is held responsible for a late train, a delay, a high price? And I think if Labour do press ahead with this, which they will, and as you say, you know, it's pretty much completed by 28, they will bear responsibility because, as you said, just people will look at the government and say, well, actually, you know, you do run the trains. They can't just say, well, no, it's Avanti's fault. That's why you can't get to Glasgow or Manchester or whatever it might be. And I think that means that in some ways, you know, people talk about the market holding people to account. I mean, it's such a fragmented system at the moment that not many people understand which private operators operate on which line. And then suddenly we are going to have this single institution which people are going to go, well, actually, it's your responsibility and the train's late.
Is it going to be a manifesto commitment?
Yes. So there had been some speculation inside Labour that this would be sort of discarded. I think because you had the U-turn over 28 billion, you've had, obviously Starmer has diluted a lot of the, or abandoned a lot of the 10 pledges he had originally. Every time Labour make a policy commitment, there's this sort of howl of scepticism, but will they U-turn on this? So she said very clearly it will be in the manifesto, and they're promising a bill in the first King's Speech, a Railways Act, to create this Great British Railways. So it's entrenched, and that's not actually surprising. You know, rail renationalisation is one of the most popular policies in opinion polls. The public like public ownership. The interesting thing is, how will they feel about public ownership at the end of Labour's first term? Some say it's often cyclical. You know, these publicly owned industries were unpopular when they existed. You know, British Rail is the example everyone uses. Louise Keogh, desperate sort of to differentiate
with
this from British Rail.
Just slap a union flag on it and everything's happy.
Well, to be fair, George, you've already touched on this, but Great British Railways was already coined by the Conservatives, wasn't it? I mean, how different is this?
So the difference is,
the government would have planned.
They're saying they are actually embracing a Conservative policy sort of quietly. Now, I think that's partly, you know, the Conservatives haven't done a good job of owning that. I mean, they haven't got it off the ground yet. The difference is the Conservatives are clear they would aim to reprivatise the contracts rather than taking them into public ownership. And even though, you know, as we've discussed, you've got quite a number of publicly owned operators already, doing it all in one term, it's quite a big administrative job. So I think that's the other challenge. It's one thing for the government to often intervene, a sort of emergency nationalisation because a contract's been defaulted on. It's another thing to do it across the entire network. So that's quite a big job too.
Just on the polling and how the public view it, Ben Walker, our polling specialist, he's done a great piece in Morning Call this morning, which you can sign up to in the description.
Nice plug.
Always, I try and slip that in every single day. Going through that polling, and essentially, as we sort of know, makes the case that the public are quite fond of public ownership, as they were in 2017, as they were in 2019. It's just whether they believe that the government or the party that's promising to do so are able to do it. And I think that's the big difference. And that's the difference he drew out with Corbyn and with Keir Starmer. So, people, when they look at Keir Starmer's Labour Party across a range of issues, they do sort of prioritise him over the government when it comes to competence.
Is there anything in the plans today that's going to impact the devolved leaders across England's cities and regions? You know, we know that services, particularly in the north and northwest of England, are terrible, particularly connectivity. Is there anything in today's announcement that's going to change that?
Yes. So on the north, Louise Hague did commit to Northern Powerhouse Rail, an east-to-west line. Didn't sort of specify the exact route, but that was a clear commitment. Said they would not restart the second leg of HS2, but they will need to look at capacity north of Birmingham. Mm-hmm. She made the point, I think a good one, that HS2 was always really missold. Everyone was focused on reduced journey times, higher speeds. Actually, really, a lot of it was about capacity. And I think had it been sold on those grounds, maybe it would have been less vulnerable to the cancellation.
Yeah, I think almost Northern Powerhouse Rail could be more transformative and consequential than the nationalisation of the operators, if it actually happens. You speak to the government and they're quite positive and optimistic about trying to get it in place or trying to establish the plans before the general election. So there's some consensus between the two parties there. There were huge questions when HS2 was cancelled about whether HS3, which is North Powerhouse Rail, could go ahead. The government, the Labour and the government have said they will. Let's see.
Is it ambitious enough?
I think for a first term, it is. I think ultimately, is there a plan that's really going to sort of transform the network in one term? I think that's an open question. I think the reality is, as with so many services, some of it's about improved efficiency, some of it improved productivity, improved morale, actually, better relations with the workers. All of this is good, sort of sensible policymaking. But the reality is, you do need more money at certain points to get improvements. And Labour's got a limited pot, you know, and where they spend it, I think a lot of that will just be shaped by the political priorities of the moment.
And you've both mentioned already that it is something that the public like. I mean, is it a vote winner?
Absolutely. No, I think it really is. I think this is a policy that will have real cut through. It's been Labour policy for a while, but quietly. Yeah. And what they're doing, they're not announcing new policies, but they are sort of re-announcing them in with much sort of in bolder and clearer language. So I think this will be a big vote winner, and it might attract back some people, you know, who've actually said they wouldn't vote or defected to the Greens, because it is the kind of policy that people liked in 2017, 2019, and the kind of policy that might also appeal even to Conservative voters. You know, polling shows public ownership is popular among, you know, Conservative voters. They're much less sort of ideological than the likes of Liz Truss about state and the markets. And, you know, Boris Johnson was talking up, you know, public ownership in various forms at points, and levelling up was in many ways a sort of government-driven project. So I think that's you know, it's those voters Labour's pitching to as much, if not more, than the left.
Labour's most popular policy is Great British Energy. And that's part of the reason that they switch from decarbonising the electricity system by 2030. That was the original mission to Great British Energy. So I think it's interesting. I think we're seeing a similar thing here.
Great British Energy.
It's a publicly owned energy company that's going to help with the green transition. And this is similar. I mean, I described it in Morning Call today that as sort of like ecumenical populism. You've got this economic populism. They are literally slapping union flags on everything. They can't stop, which I think is a good vote winner. The problem, though, it doesn't really go that far. I mean, going back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, who's the target, how are they selling it? Well, it's very passenger focused. It's very much about reversing decline. It's about bringing the country together. It's about having some pride in these institutions. There's no enemy. There's no who are we opposed to, who are we against. And that makes it tricky, I think, to establish a narrative, a story, and, you know, and that's one of
it's
the biggest.
Quite refreshing as well, though, isn't it? Quite grown up, dare I say?
Well, maybe for you. Yeah, no, I think it is, but it's still the case. It's still the case, and it's a difference, right? It's a difference from 5 years ago and from the Corbyn era.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to submit a question for us to discuss on a future podcast, you can do so at newstatesman.com/youaskus. If you're listening on Spotify, just scroll down on the episode page and type your reply. Or if you're watching on YouTube, you can leave a question in the comments. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Hannah Barnes, and my colleagues, Freddie Hayward and George Eaton. We'll be back tomorrow to answer your questions on the UK's new defence spending plans and the likelihood of a Reform UK Conservative coalition. This episode was produced by Catherine Hughes.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.